This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
As the great basketball philosopher Rasheed Wallace once said, ball don't lie. Hello again. Welcome back to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas, director of basketball coverage, recruiting reporter, analyst, beat guy for Texas basketball at orangebloods.com. This is the ninth installment of the Droppin' Dimes podcast, and we're getting closer to the season. I just saw one of the best college basketball Twitter followers you can have, Ken Pomeroy, who runs kenpom.com. His computer came up with a lot of the advanced statistics that have become the norm for people to use in college basketball. It's something that I'll refer to a lot throughout the season when talking about the Longhorns in college basketball. And he said that this is the next Tuesday that there won't be college basketball won't be until April 9th. So college basketball is almost here. And I got my first real taste of that up in Kansas City last Wednesday at Big 12 Media Day, and talked about it on the last episode of this podcast. They cram a lot into one day. So basically, you know, I fly out there the day before, hung out, watched my Red Sox win, went and had the wings at the Peanuts. I've heard so many great things about them. I'm a Buffalo wing guy. That's my favorite food in the world. They met the hype. They were incredible. So if you're ever in Kansas City looking for some wings, and I went to the original one, that's where I was closest to it. A total dive bar, hole in the wall, which I love places like that. I feel like they have some more character. Still have some regulars in there. So got to Kansas City the day before, had some wings, watched the Red Sox. But then, you know, the next morning you get to the Sprint Center at like 8:30. And it's just on from about 8:30 to, I think we left the podium area after the breakout sessions for the head coaches, probably about 1:45 p.m. And those coaches are off. Many of them go and have practice. I know you could look at Fran Fraschilla's Twitter account. He was at Kansas State practice after being at the Big 12 Media Day. So they're college coaches. They don't want to waste a day that could be a practice opportunity just because they're at Big 12 Media Day. So it's a lot crammed in. And by a lot, I mean I transcribed all of my interviews that I did there. Long story short, when I write and I'm using quotes, I'm one of those types of people that has to transcribe all of them. And then it kind of jogs my memory. And I go through and I pick the ones I want to formulate my story. That's just kind of how I am. I envy those people that can scribble things on a notepad and then write a story. That's just not the way I do it. So after all the interviews, I had just over 10,000 words in quotes only from Matt Coleman, Kerwin Roach, Dylan Osikowski, and Shaka Smart. That's a lot. That's like, I think it's like 26 pages single spaced on a Microsoft Word document. So they talked about a lot. I'm going to try to give you the things that stood out the most to me during all my conversations with those guys. Had some one-on-one conversations. And for those of you that are orangebloods.com members, you've seen some of this stuff. I just posted a story about, you know, why Texas thinks the offense looks different. Had some things about Andrew Jones, Dylan Osikowski, who was on a bike at 6:30 a.m. Shaka Smart joined him because it was Osikowski's day to get his 40-minute bike ride in to help him keep his weight in a good level. And before media day, he was on the bike at 6:30 a.m. with Shaka Smart. And Dylan went into some detail about, I mean, it's been a lifestyle change for that guy. Talks about meal planning twice, you know, every 2 weeks, watching cooking shows. I mean, he is all about it, which is really cool to see a guy go through that transformation. But that was a topic, and that content starting to to trickle out once I get through all those quotes. Wrote a lot about the offense, so I'll start there. And mostly because if Texas is going to be better this season, it's going to be mostly dictated by how they perform on offense. I think that they're going to be a good defense again. The players were confident they're going to be a good defense again. Shaka Smart seemed confident about that. Sources around the program seem confident about that. So while there's not a Jarrett Allen or Mohamed Bamba type guy to anchor a half-court defense, there's more experience, there's more depth. I think their guard group has a chance to be really good defensively if it wants to, especially Kerwin Roach. He can be the best defensive guard in the country if he does, if he dedicates himself to it every single game. Matt Coleman's a terrific defender. You know, you got some size and tenacity in a freshman like Courtney Ramey. Elijah Long, I think people are underrating or overlooking his ability on defense as a veteran guard. So they're not expecting much of a drop-off on defense. It might look different, but as Dylan Osikowski was telling me, you know, there were games last year when Mohamed Bamba was telling his teammates, hey, don't, basically put that ball, that guy driving with the ball on your hip and just funnel him to me. You know, of course, the basic defensive principle is you get in front of the ball, you stop the dribble drive. Well, Bamba was telling teammates, hey, just funnel that to me and I'll swat the shot. So they're not expecting much of a drop off defensively. I think Jackson Hayes can give them some of that shot blocking presence. Jericho Sims, to an extent, can give them some of that. But really, Hayes is the guy, you know, that could give Texas that kind of presence. He's almost 7 feet tall. He's got a 7'5" wingspan. He's super athletic, and it sounds like he's got a little bit of that timing that's required to block shots. That natural instinctive timing that Bamba was just terrific at. So he could give them a little bit of that. Sims can give them a little bit of that, but really it starts with the guards around the perimeter. And as much attention as, you know, Snoop Roach and Matt Coleman will get for their playmaking on offense, those guys need to be two-way players. And I think they understand that from talking to them, that they understand the kind of impact they can make defensively. So they expect to be good again on defense. Getting back to the offense, If this team and this program is going to make a jump, it's going to be offensively. And they talked at length about this is something that we've talked about on the Drop and Dimes podcast before, because Shaka Smart was mentioning it in July. Playing with pace, playing with better spacing, they've really tried to adopt this 7-second mentality, which is they want to try to score the ball within the first 7 seconds of a possession. And when you hear that, you know, I think some people think, well, you know, they don't have to throw something up in the first 7 seconds just to do it. You're absolutely right. I think it's more so they want to really dedicate themselves to pushing the tempo. Matt Coleman said they spend a lot of time on drag screens, which drag screens are the big guy trailing the transition play. So the guy that's either getting the rebound and getting it to a guard, or he's, you know, passing it in after a make or something like that. Drag screen, that guy is setting a screen for that guard, normally at the top of the key type area, sometimes on the wings. You'll see it happen in the NBA a lot, kind of all over the floor. And the purpose of that is it's harder for the defense to defend pick and roll or pick and pop when it's not set in transition. It's a little bit more difficult at that speed to think about your help defense, to get your feet set and defend the screen, to communicate. It's a very effective way to generate easy shots. And it's something that a lot of NBA teams doing. It's something a lot of good college basketball teams doing. So that's something I think you'll see as a staple of Texas in transition, is a lot of drag screen action. Because they've got some forwards that are going to be pop guys like Kamaka Hepa, Dylan Osikowski, you know, Brock Cunningham, if he's on the floor. And they got, I think, some really, really good role guys as well in Jericho Sims, Jackson Hayes, Royce Hamm to an extent. But we've seen what Sims can do in a pick and roll type scenario. It sounds like haze, specifically in that area, is one of the most natural rolling bigs that some people have seen in a while at this level, because you don't often see athletes at his size and his wingspan be able to maneuver their body and go and get the ball with soft hands and come down with it and make a play. And I think that kind of gets back to his football background. This is a guy that grew up playing a lot of football. His dad is the tight ends coach for the Cincinnati Bengals. So he's been around the pigskin a lot. And I think that that's something Texas fans will notice. But they did a ton on drag screens, a ton on transition, spacing. I think Neil Berry, the new assistant coach who comes from Iowa State, who, you know, has been as good as anybody over the last few years about pace and spacing and scoring efficiently on offense. I think he's had a hand in working with some things with the team there. So that those are some key areas that the Shaka Smart and the players talked about. But as Shaka said at one point, you know, when I asked him, I was like, hey, when we're watching the game visually, what is it going to look like when things are going right on offense? And he goes, you know, don't take this as a smart ass response, but the ball going through the bucket more often. But he went on to say, you know, basically going getting into detail about spacing and things like that. You can have great spacing, but if you don't have guys that are knocking down shots, that defense won't be spaced. That defense doesn't have to. The defense isn't obligated to space a certain way just because offensive players are in a certain position or are moving a certain way or coming off screens or whatnot, whatever. You got to knock down shots. And really, so much of what Texas is going to be able to do offensively gets back to knocking down shots. And, you know, Dylan Osakowski said, you know, he was one of the guys in the summer that shot, you know, had to make 10,000 threes. And there, it sounds like a lot of guys put in a ton of work on perimeter shooting on their own in the summer. And that's really how you get better. You know, of course, scheme helps, experience helps, getting the ball in the right spots helps, all those things. But a lot of shooting comes from maturity, from confidence, things like being shot ready. You know, when the ball comes to you, being ready to shoot it the right way and shooting it the right way, as opposed to just shooting an open shot just to shoot it. Understanding what's an average shot, a good shot, and a great shot. You know, all those things. But it really just it gets back to so much. And this is what, you know, the players talked about is, you know, when you put in that much work, you've got confidence in your ability to go out and knock down shots. So a lot of talk about the offense. It sounds like they're fully dedicated to really pushing tempo as much as they can. We'll see. I think if you go back and look, and I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, if you go back and look at KenPom.com at Texas's average offensive possession length, so how long on average it takes Texas to have an offensive possession, and I think they were something like 252nd nationally. So definitely on the back third in terms of one of the slowest tempo teams in the country on offense. And in terms of Big 12 play, they were dead last. Dead last, and I think possessions per game, which gets back to just the tempo they play with and the tempo of the game. And some of that's influenced on their half-court defense being so good, but their tempo was dead last for, you know, at least partially for the offense. They want to play a lot faster, and it makes sense on paper. You look at their personnel. Sims and Hayes can really run. Osakowski's in great shape. You've got experienced ball handlers that can really fly up and down the floor. You've got – Texas has some depth, both guards and forwards and bigs. So on paper, it really seems like a good match. And I'll just be curious to see – if when they get into these situations against teams like to grind it out, do they stick with that? Do they really dedicate themselves to really push it every chance they get? You know, it's one thing to say you want to do it. it's got to be a mindset that's consistent each time out there that, you know, when we get a rebound or you know, something happens, when we can get out and run, we're going to get out and run as fast as we can, not just the ball handler, but the bigs, shooters getting to the corners, things like that. So a big part of the conversation piece at Big 12 Media Day was just, you know, about the Texas offense. And grab a sip of water here. I had my second rec league basketball game tonight. I was probable for the game if we're putting an injury diagnosis on it. I've never once in my life sprained my ankle, knock on wood. Never once in my life sprained my ankle. And it, after the first game a couple weeks ago, it's just been really sore. But I played on it, played pretty well. 4 of 5 from beyond the arc, but man, am I sore right now. It's just one of those situations where you just pound a bunch of water and it's not going through you for hours because that's how dehydrated you are. And in terms of tempo, again, you're listening to the Dropping Dimes podcast on theyak.com, episode 9. We're up to 9 episodes of this bad boy, which I hope is your home for Texas basketball discussion as we inch closer and closer to the beginning of the 2018-19 season. Along the lines of tempo, it came up about pressing, and I'm to blame for that. I'm sure part of Shaka Smart is – no, he doesn't – I guess it's not fair to say he's driven crazy by those questions, because he talked at length about it and got into some detail. But I know he's made his point clear so many times, or points so many times, that it's never going to look like a VCU. You're not going to have the same personnel. You're not going to have the same type of mentality with, you know, a bunch of kids that had no high major offers compared to guys playing at Texas. And when you're in the Big 12, you're often playing teams that have good ball handlers. It's one of the reasons why Kansas is always so good. They usually have 2 veteran playmaking point guards that play together. It's why West Virginia, with Javon Carter and Dexter Miles, that were there through their senior years. Iowa State has always had some good lead guards that are hard to press. So, you know, TCU, for example, has got Alex Robinson and Jalen Fisher. So the Big 12 is usually filled with these teams that have some quality ball handlers. So it's not as easy to press those guys. They can make one slight mistake, an open three or an open layup real quick. But I still think Shaka Smart's got this itch with pressing, and it's starting to itch a little more. And, you know, he talked at length about it, you know, made all those points again. But he did say on paper, This is the first time that they've really had the depth to potentially do that, to use that more, and to try to get after people that way a little more. And, you know, that's one way to increase tempo, is if you throw that out there for stretches of the game and try to speed the other team up into some long jumpers and playing quicker and things like that, that's going to lead to some potential run out and transition offense situations the other way. So I think that we're going to see it more than we saw it last year, certainly the year before that, which I guess isn't saying a whole lot, because Texas really never had the depth to do that. And I think it was just too much to do in the first year with all those new players. But I think we're going to see it more. And, you know, that's, you know, Shaka didn't really hide from the fact that he would like to do it. It's just a matter of, can he get the players to do it the way it needs to be done to have success? You know, go back to last year when Andrew Jones was healthy and they were using it some. It nearly won them the Gonzaga game. Why was that? Well, they got down big, and that's when your desperation mode kicks in, and you're looking up at the scoreboard, and you're like, oh my gosh, we're down 18 points. We got to figure out, scratch and claw, and do whatever we can to get the ball back, to get some easy buckets, and so on and so forth. And, you know, they threw the press out there, and it was great. Well, I think it was either the next game at home or 2 games after, and I think it was against Florida A&M, who was not a good team. didn't have good ball handlers. And Texas used it again, and there just wasn't that same urgency, that same focus, that same want to. It was just kind of going through the motions. They're just kind of pressing just because they're told to. And that's the difficulty. And that's with anything in basketball too. You know, you're going to have times when you call things or run things or whatever, and guys just aren't fully locked into doing it. That's what makes the great teams great, is they have guys that are locked in all the time. But it sounds like if there are positive returns early on, I think we could see it more and more throughout the year, especially if the depth stays in a good situation. I'm excited to see it potentially, because I know what Roach can do in it when he's locked in. I know what Coleman can do in it when he's locked in. Courtney Ramey, and Matt Coleman said, Courtney Ramey wants to pick you up full court in any pickup situation, anytime a ball is out there in 5-on-5. I mean, he's got some tenacity to him. It's going to be a detriment at times early on as he gets adjusted to the college game, but he would definitely do it. We've seen what Jericho Sims can do in terms of being that forward on the ball. And I think Jackson Hayes would be a terrific guy in the back end. So we'll see what happens. But if this is a team that wants to play very, very fast on offense, a way to do that is to speed teams up on defense. You know, get those slower tempo type teams into situations where they're trying to beat the press and throw the ball off the floor. Maybe you invite some of those early shots that might be average shots as opposed to good shots. So I think if I'm Shocker Smart, I'm using it definitely early on to see how guys respond. And it's something that I think that they should go to, especially to force kind of the aggressiveness. You know, there's so many times watching them last year when they were able to use it some, it didn't always work well. But I felt like it forced the team's aggressiveness on both ends of the floor. So I think that'll be something to follow. Again, you're listening to the Droppin' Dimes podcast on theyak.com. I am Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com, talking some Texas Longhorns basketball, going through some of the key points from Big 12 Media Day. As for the fifth starter, barring a huge shock, it's going to be Matt Coleman, Kerwin Roach, Dylan Ostakowski, and Jericho Sims in the starting lineup. But that fifth guy is up for grabs. And a few weeks ago, I would have thought for sure it was Courtney Ramey. I probably even said it on this podcast. That was kind of the summer he was having at that point in time, and his arrow just was pointing up. And if you think about it personnel-wise, I think he's listed at 6'3". He's got some strength to him. He could potentially guard three different positions, and he has a lot of those playmaking attributes that you like in a lead guard or a combo guard. Well, I mean, it sounds like he's kind of encountered some freshman bumps in the road, which all freshmen do. That's why they're freshmen. And now I'm really not quite sure how that situation is going to work. And we asked Shocker Smart at Big 12 Media Day, and he was unsure. He basically said it was going to be a to-be-determined type of thing that really might not sort itself out until December, as they kind of see how some lineups work, how some guys play together. It might be one of those situations where if they're playing a bigger lineup, maybe they throw Kamaka Hep out there early on. If they're playing, you know, maybe a more experienced team that does some different things defensively, maybe they put Elijah Long out there. You know, if they're playing a team with some more size at the guard spot, maybe it's Courtney Ramey, maybe it's Chase Febres, who Dylan Ostakowski said was really shooting the ball better the last couple weeks. Man, what a lift that would be for Texas if he turns into the shooter that they thought he'd be when they recruited him. I mean, Shaka Smart has compared him some to Troy Daniels, and Troy Daniels made it to the NBA because he can bomb threes. So maybe it's Chase Febres that jumps into that, that final spot. So we'll see. It's the way Shaka Smart talked at Big 12 Media Day was definitely a to be determined, type of thing. And, you know, don't be surprised if you see some different starters, probably throughout the entire month of November, basically, unless one of those guys really just steps up and runs with it. And, you know, we've mentioned some, the Hoops corruption trial that was taking place in New York with, you know, the Adidas executives and former agent runner Christian Dawkins. And I cannot believe they had to find the 12 most naive jurors, which I guess is what you're supposed to do, I guess. 12 most naive jurors as it relates to college basketball, because they bought what the prosecution was selling, which is these bad guys over here were out to get the universities and defraud them and take advantage of them and so on and so forth, despite the fact that they presented so many text messages and things from phone conversations about these college coaches communicating with these guys about recruits and money and things like that. So they were all found guilty, which that still blows my mind. What happens next might be determined by, you know, do they try to talk to lessen their sentence or what happens from there? Because there's still going to be more trials upcoming. But it was a topic at Big 12 Media Day. And, you know, I was talking to Austin American Statesman reporter Brian Davis, who was there as well. You know, there's a point I was interviewing, I think, Matt Coleman or Cronin Roach, and he was over with Bob Bowlesby. And he said that, you know, Bowlesby was the Big 12 commissioner. Bowlesby was asked flat out, is Big 12 basketball fair? Because, you know, Kansas is come up a lot in this stuff. Bill Self and assistant coach Curtis Townsend, they released a statement the morning of Big 12 Media Day that Sylvia D'Souza, their sophomore five-star big man, is being held out while his eligibility is being reviewed. Obviously, Billy Preston got held out for the entire season after a single car accident revealed something about the car, which, I mean, come on now, let's connect the dots. So it's, you know, and Bowlesby flat out asked that, and he didn't really have a good answer for it. And he got asked another type of question like that and kind of just dismissed that idea. But that idea is starting to float around, and I think it's a real thing. And we asked Shaka Smart about it, about the trial and stuff like that. And I thought he made a great, great point in that because of the way the NCAA operates and is operating, and specifically as it relates to this kind of thing, it basically leaves these situations up to the individual universities to handle the way they want to handle it. And that's not consistent across the board. That's, you know, not every compliance department is the same. Not every athletic director is the same. Not every coaching staff is the same. And, you know, there's not a consistency throughout high major college basketball. You know, for example, Eric Davis Jr. allegedly accepted a loan from Christian Dawkins. That report came out late last season. Texas held Davis out the entire rest of the season. I'm pretty sure that Texas was the only program in the country of any of those guys named to hold a player out for more than a game. And meanwhile, all these other programs immediately were clearing these guys. And I'm not saying that they were guilty of whatever, but that report came out and people were immediately cleared. And you've got Texas that held the guy out for the entire year. And what he allegedly accepted was not really in the same area as some of the alleged deals that went down. So I think Shaka made a good point about that. And I think this trial is going to be fascinating to follow. I don't think this conversation is going away. It sounds like the NCAA had a person at the trial paying close attention to what's going on. But the NCAA, at the end of the day, they have to have everything basically proved to them in order to do anything, because they don't really have much power as it relates to investigating and things like that. But I thought that was a good point made by by Shaka as it relates to the individual programs. And, you know, he was asked about, you know, obviously you don't want Texas mentioned any of that. And Texas was mentioned. Brian Bowen Sr. basically said via Christian Dawkins that Texas told Christian Dawkins that they would, you know, just help him with housing. If Brian Bowen committed to Texas, he later changed that and said that he didn't ever recall specifically hearing that. But if you're Texas, you don't want to be mentioning that. And Texas came out, I think a day after that, basically said its compliance department reviewed everything about the Brian Bowen recruitment thoroughly, well before anything hit that corruption trial, and basically Texas came out clean on the other end. So, you know, they did their homework early on about that. And, you know, Shaka basically said, hey, our statement is our statement. We can't control what other people are saying. So I didn't get the impression that he was at all concerned about that thing. But it's, you know, with Coach K's comments, and then Zion Williamson got tied into all of this, and then, you know, you've got Bill Self, who at one point, I was reading a report on KansasCity.com, a reporter asked him if Self thought he should be communicating with these executives and these shoe company people. And then Self basically went, oh, well, I communicate with you. I respond to your calls and texts, like, you know, being an arrogant ass about it. I don't think this is going away. I think this is something college coaches are going to have to answer throughout the year, especially because I believe there's supposed to be another trial in the winter and then another trial in the next spring, perhaps when the NCAA tournament's going on. How fitting would that be? I think it's going to be something to follow. We'll wrap things up with some – I always like to throw in some NBA discussion at the end, and just watched my Houston Rockets fall to 1-5 on the season. Not the start I expected, to say the least. Although James Harden's been out a little bit with a hamstring injury. He didn't play tonight against the Blazers. They got their asses kicked at home, and they look like a mess. I can't make up my mind if in a way, some of these guys have tired legs because of the playoff grind, or maybe they did too much in the summer. I don't know. But some of these shooting numbers are just putrid. There's not a lot of flow on offense. The defense is still clearly trying to learn how to play together in terms of communications and things like that. It's a mess of a team right now. I'd be lying. You know, I talked last week about, you know, my one concern being just, you know, Clint Capella's play inside because Houston got taken advantage of some of the paint. I'm got a concerned level about the Rockets. This is not trending in a positive way. And I don't think it has anything to do with any sort of, you know, specific chemistry issues as it relates to, you know, when things went south and Kevin McHale eventually got fired that season. I don't think it's anything like that. I think the on-court chemistry needs to improve because some of these guys just haven't played together. And that's going to be a work in progress for anybody in the NBA this time of year. You know, just look at the Celtics integrating those guys at the beginning of the year. But this is not going to be the same defense as last year. And it was a good defense last year. I think, you know, they miss that communication and that leadership and that toughness that Trevor Ariza provided. You know, PJ Tucker gives them a lot of that, but he's only one guy. And I just wonder what's going to pull them out of this funk, because everything came so easy to them on offense last year, and it's not coming easy right now. I mean, Eric Gordon had another awful game shooting the basketball. He's done it a few times this year. Chris Paul was not efficient tonight. It just, nothing's coming easy for them on offense. You know, if you would have told me, hey, they're one of the best offenses in the NBA, but their defense is still a major work in progress right now, I'd be, yeah, that makes sense. But offensive struggles, that's, I don't know, man. I think Rockets fans should be at least slightly concerned about the way this has looked so far. You know, I've got a lot of people that are, you know, they're basically saying, hey, we're going to get this right. Well, six games into the year and you're 1-5, and that one was a win over on the road against the Lakers in a wild game that required Harden making some big shots down the stretch. So we'll see. I just have my concerns right now about the Houston Rockets. And meanwhile, Golden State scored 92 points in the first half of a game recently. And Klay Thompson just basically was NBA Jam on fire mode the entire game from beyond the arc. You know, the Spurs look like they're adapting to their personnel well. It means a lot of mid-range basketball, but that's what you got. You got to get the most out of it. And, I think that people are still underrating what they could do. The Mavs have had some exciting moments. I don't think they're a playoff team, but I think that they have to be enthused by what they're seeing from the young players right now. So the West is going to be brutal again. The Rockets better figure it out quick, or, you know, Mike D'Antoni's going to have to answer some questions. And let's not forget, they lost their key assistant coach and defensive coordinator, you know, basically weeks before the season. So that is showing on the floor as well. But I've rambled on for a while now. I probably need to ice at least my ankle after tonight's Rec League game. But on the next Drop in Dimes podcast on theyak.com, it'll be game day. That's right. It'll be game day. I don't know. I forgot that. I didn't forget that, but I was looking at numbers wrong. November 6th, season opener, Eastern Illinois. That'll kick things off for the Longhorns. So we'll probably have a more of a preview piece then, because I probably won't get done covering that game until late that night. But, you know, we'll have a season preview to talk about, as, you know, we'll get into some podcasts with some actual game discussion to talk about, which will be great. So until then, take care of your bodies if you're playing rec league basketball. You know, cheer on your NBA teams and get ready for months and months of basketball until April 9th. That'll be our first Tuesday when we don't have college basketball. So until next week, have a good weekend. Watch some hoops. Take care.